there. This is Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett. Thank you for tuning in. I appreciate your time. Hope you're having a great day wherever you are, whatever time it happens to be, and whenever you listen to this. Because that's the wonderful thing about this program. It's 24/7, anytime, any place, anywhere. When you're ready, you tune in, and that's all there is to it. I want to say thank you real quick. First off, I've been getting some wonderful questions and some interesting suggestions about topics that you want to hear. And I really appreciate that. I can't cover everything. Okay. The way I do it is I kind of go with my own sense of what I can connect with and how I can best present the information, given the ability that I have to understand it. And that's how I go. Okay. So don't be offended if I can't follow up on your topic. I really do appreciate the support, and I appreciate your inquisitiveness and the things that you find fascinating, because it's so nice to see that and hear that. It resonates. All right. The other thing that I want to say too is, if you want to find out more, you are welcome to, listen to the other shows at Empower. There's a ton of stuff in the archives, and that may also, spark some more interest and some connections. And please follow up with my guests, because these folks they're doing a whole lot of fun stuff, and it's under the radar in many cases. And that's why it's so fabulous, because it is under the radar. It's out there. It's like little treasures. They're all waiting to be discovered and shared and enjoyed. Okay. So today, another treasure. And this is something that, just because it's under the radar and hasn't, been adopted or accepted or discovered by mainstream, doesn't mean it has any less value. It means it takes us a while to appreciate the good stuff and finally, sort through all the flotsam and find stuff that really connects and that makes sense and that's absolutely invaluable in the information that it offers us. This book is called The Afterlife Healing Circle: How Anyone Can Contact the Other Side. I like it because it doesn't make it, the specialty of a medium or somebody with, a profound gift, or somebody you have to pay $5,000 to see if mom is still alive, or, Uncle Eddie has left you a treasure somewhere, or if your cat Morpheus is really not dead. Okay. So those things, it's up to you, but you can do that yourself. All right. And so this is what it's about. It's about helping us make our own connections, and without, making it something, some deep, profound, secret, esoteric language that is inaccessible to the general population. So my guest is a co-writer of the book, Candace Talmadge. And you go CL or Candace? I didn't ask before Candace. We got started. Okay.
Candace will
do. One more time.
Candace.
Okay. The thing about this book that I really liked, and you got the foreword by Raymond Moody, is that it's taken a long time to percolate. And between the two of you, you cover a lot of very solid topics. Can you give us a background, just how you got started? I know the writing, you've been doing that since 76, but how the other part came into it, and that you expanded upon that to create what you have in terms of a resource.
Well, my background was business journalism, and I didn't know that I had really deep emotional and spiritual needs, and it kind of reached a crisis point back in 1986. Again, I was dimly aware that I was in trouble, and I found a person to help me. They say when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Well, this was pretty much what happened, except in my case, it was when the client is ready, the therapist appears. So I was introduced to a very profound energy-based therapy called Tsunam Therapy, and it just changed my emotional and spiritual landscape pretty much overnight. And I wanted to support what my therapist was doing, and she's my co-author, Jana Simons. And so we started this little place where people could come, and Jana would teach classes and do Tsunam Therapy on an individual basis. And about 8 or 9 months later, after we started it, the mother of one of Jana's students needed the Afterlife Healing Circle. Well, I'd never sat in on anything like that before, and it just knocked my socks off. And 3 years later, I interviewed the woman. And her name is Clara Jones in the book. That's a pseudonym. And she told me how it had profoundly helped her heal certain issues that she had done extensive psychiatric treatment and psychotherapy and just couldn't get the resolution that she needed. And it was about her deceased mother. So that, you know, and when I sat in on that circle and it was so mind and heart-blowingly moving and everybody was celebrating, everybody got something out of it, that was the beginning of my interest in contacting the so-called dead. And I say that phrase because the only difference between you and me and the people listening to this show and those who are dead is that the dead do not have bodies that we recognize as physical. Everything else stays the same. And of course, that contravenes one very long-held belief that somehow we get wiser or all-knowing or whatever when we cross over to the other side into some sort of perfected state. And what I found through my experiences of the afterlife healing circle and what people like Arthur Ford, the medium in England in the 20th century, you know, have said is that basically who you are when you're in a physical body, you will be when you're no longer in a physical body. The only thing that dies is that physical body. The rest of you, your wisdom, your learning, and your challenges and limitations remain exactly the same.
One of the things I thought was really funny when my dad died, and we had a challenging relationship, very challenging, to put it bluntly. But there was this thing of, I wasn't sure if I was right place, right time. And I knew he was dying, and I knew I couldn't get there. And I stepped out on the porch. I'm talking with my mom and saying, Mom, this is a 5-hour drive. He's going. I know he can't. It won't be there. And I got the rainbow on the, there's a steeple of the church that I could see. And there's this rainbow coming off the church. I'm like, oh my gosh. Oh, you know, I knew it was okay. And then within a short time period of his death, I felt his energy. And he said, I just came to see how the other half lives.
Yes.
It's like, oh, daddy. Yes, yes, yes. That's you. Only he would say something, you know, but that's the kind of thing is that, but there's a sense, at least for me, when I do this, and this is a connection, that things are forgiven, and it isn't, there's no grudge there. There's an acceptance and a distance between this corporeal stuff that we get caught up in. And yeah, we may not get any wiser, but we do in some ways get over it.
Well, hopefully we get over it. And some things I think that we can get over, and the stuff that we can get over, we do get over. All right. But there are also things that linger from lifetime to lifetime and go with us. And that's one of the reasons we keep coming back into our physical bodies, is that we know that in our physical bodies, we have the 5 physical senses and a different experience. And it sets up a situation where we can grapple with our issues and challenges and, you know, maybe move along a bit.
What I think is so fascinating about that is that, you know, there are soul groups. There are groups that we come back with again and again. And I've been in situations where I have shifted from this phase into the other phase, and they don't look like they do here. I know them. I know them in that other, on that other plane, that other state of being, that, you know, that other vibration frequency. But when I get back here, it's like, shoot, who are you again? You are not the same. You know, it's just that sense of discombobulation, because some of these folks I know so well, and yet when I get here, they've got issues, just like me.
Well, everybody has issues. That's why we're here, all right? That's par for the course. And here's the thing about recognizing souls. Each soul has a unique vibrational frequency. That doesn't change from lifetime to lifetime. It became yours when you came into being as a soul. It will be yours throughout eternity. And that's kind of what we're picking up through those psychic, or what I call soul senses. We all have them. We can all use them. We just don't recognize them for what they are and how they function.
And talk about that, because that's what, if you're listening now, this is important, because this gives you kind of a template for understanding this.
Right. And the way you use the afterlife healing circle is through your soul senses. And there are 4 that we know of. There could be more. And they are soul vision, which is the most common one and that everybody talks about, also known as clairvoyance. There is soul awareness. That's one that most people aren't really aware of or recognize. It's distinct. It gets lumped in with soul feeling, which is, you know, literally vibrations on the body, as clairsentience. But it's actually, soul awareness is a distinct channel of information, and it just drops into your head as a knowing or an awareness. And then finally, there's the fourth one, clairsentience, which we call soul understanding, because it unfolds as a sequential understanding. And those channels, we all have four channels. We're stronger in two and weaker in two. And the globe is actually divided, you know, east and west. The predominant soul senses in the east are soul awareness and soul feeling. That is why Eastern societies value harmony and consensus, because people who are strong in soul feeling, it is literally physically painful to have an argument. In the West, the opposite is true. The predominant soul senses are soul vision and soul understanding. And that leads to a sort of different, very different viewpoint. And it's not so, you know, going at the debates and everything like that. It is not so difficult to do that because the aura is more compact in people who are high in those two soul senses. So that's why East is East and West is West. And when we begin to recognize that, we can begin to, A, tune in to ourselves, and B, be aware that the community not only consists of people who are in physical bodies, but souls who are not in physical bodies, who we can communicate with through those soul senses. But you just have to recognize that this is what they are. You've got them. Start paying attention.
Now, there's some stuff going on right now, though, that is very, I think, on two planes. It's exciting, and it's a little bit disconcerting, because there's a lot of mixing up between this, what we refer to as an ET or extraterrestrial, versus a paranormal. And the ability to try and discern which can be very complicated and complex, because sometimes these things overlap and overlay, and we're still learning a language for this. Have you a special way to address that?
Well, I would say that between, say, an extraterrestrial and a paranormal, there is an overlay. And I wouldn't worry so much about it, because there are some beings that I have dealt with who would be, if they appeared in this material world, would definitely be looked at as aliens, because they do not have human form. They've never taken human form. But that doesn't mean they aren't wise and loving souls. And on the other hand, there are also souls that have never taken human form who are anything but wise and loving. So my whole approach is, I don't worry about it. I mean, to me, the fact that there are beings, they're physical, that are not of earthly origin, is a non-question, because I know it's true, for me at least, all right? I don't care, and I don't worry about it. The paranormal, to me, that's a misnomer. To me, our definition of what is normal is very limited. It's too limited. And if we start to expand our definition of normal to include information through the soul senses, the so-called psychic senses, then suddenly what is really normal is almost limitless. All right? So that's my answer. I really don't make a big distinction, nor do I really worry about it. You know, yeah, there are ETs. And, you know, maybe they're smart enough not really to come on and meet us full face, because I don't know if we're ready to handle that yet, but we're getting there.
Well, but it's the other thing, too, that we're talking about, is these discarnate or non-corporeal energies, entities, who also have a presence here. They're very much a part of our plane. And until we are able to embrace that whatever it is, good, bad, and indifferent, exists, we're limited in our ability to appreciate the reality. In my, you know, my view, reality is, it's very finite right now, what we have defined as reality.
Yes, yes. And it's very limited to the material and the mental, okay? You know, your conscious thoughts, you can't really avoid them, so you have to acknowledge that they exist, although there are some reductionists who would argue that conscious thoughts are nothing but chemicals, okay? Fine, they can take that. I think there's a lot more to it. But I think, Wendy, we really need to get a grip on what energy is, all right? The scientific definition of energy is the ability to do work, and that means heat drives, you know, boils water, that changes into steam, that powers a locomotive piston, that drives a train. That's the ability to do work, and that's perfectly good material definition of energy. But for
it's like an alchemy or transmutation.
Well, that again, that's related to, yes, that's related to material physical reality. But our definition has to embrace mental, emotional, and spiritual realities. So what we want to define energy as is the ability to love. When we do that, we take energy out of the pure limited material and we understand that the highest, finest, greatest energy possible is unconditional love, because it has no limitations, no expectations, no conditions, no judgments to hamstring it. That is the finest, lightest, highest, most powerful vibration there is. Some people call it God. Some people call that universal mind, the great spirit. I don't care. Pick your favorite label. I use God because it's short and sweet. But that's
right.
God.
I
that's
know.
The
yeah,
energy
it's tough.
God.
Well, you do. You work with energy. You do that E equals MC squared in the book. You kind of reposition it to give it that consciousness squared.
Yes. And that's really, you know, those variables, Einstein just didn't go far enough. I mean, that's his equivalence equation, and it immediately overthrew Newtonian physics and caused a real big paradigm shift. But he didn't go far enough, because he didn't understand that what E equals MC squared is really talking about is what happens when we die. All right? We change from material to energy, but we are still who we are. And conversely, when we appear or are born, then consciousness acts on energy and matter, M, is produced. All right? So all I'm trying to say is that this is an equivalent. Love, consciousness, matter, and energy, those are the equivalents, not just energy and matter, but you also have to put love and consciousness in there. And once you do, you get a far more complete and holistic worldview of who we are and how important we are.
There was something that I think was whether Einstein's letter to his daughter talking about love, that mentioned something about how he wished or he sought to expand that, but we weren't really ready for it.
Well, then obviously he intuited that he knew that something was missing from his definition. And believe me, this is not my brilliance, all right? You remember those non-corporeal, non-human entities you were talking about earlier?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, one of them became a member of what I call the Sunan Society, which is a group of non-physical beings who help us with Sunan therapy, which is the therapy I was talking about that I first encountered in 1986. This being, who calls himself Magari and who is a part of my fiction series, because I've known him in many lifetimes, this being, I asked the leader of the Sunan Society, Dr. Sunan, I said, okay, this isn't working. We need another definition for energy, because it just ain't fitting, because I was noodling around with this back in the early 90s. So by golly, he found Magari, and Magari provided that definition for him. And it's very, very important. We've really got to wrap our hearts and minds around that.
When you're doing the work with a client, how do you start?
We start by doing a lot of groundwork with the client and making sure that the client is emotionally prepared to do this energy work, because our energy work is a lot deeper. It directly addresses the emotional body. It's not about working in the mind, affirming or visualizing, or that's great. It does, but we work right in the emotional body, that subconscious part of self that's also known as the inner child, all right? We find that if you really want to make change in people's behavior, you have to change how they feel about themselves. So what we do is we basically do our best to make sure that the client is ready to walk into these emotional issues and find and start to examine and perhaps they reappraise judgments that they've made about self, because self-judgment always hides out in the emotional body, and it's self-judgment that causes all those negative repeating patterns of behavior and feelings, you know, same, you know, different person or situation, same darn issue. And it's hooked into our consciousness and cemented there by self-judgment. When we start to free ourselves from self-judgment, our reality begins to shift automatically.
Okay. And basically it's self-acceptance.
It's self-acceptance, but it's you really cannot do that from a conscious state, because you'll say, I accept myself at the mental state, and you will. But at the emotional state, your emotional body says, no way. You know, I've still got all these issues. I'm suffering from all these self-judgments that you have, and they will not allow you to accept yourself at the emotional level. That's a very different kettle of fish, and that's what we're going for.
Well, that would be called attachment.
And again, an attachment is formed by a self-judgment. You want to really release attachment, you can't do it from the mental state. You've got to go into that emotional, and that emotional energy is magnetic. That's why it's an attachment, because it's stuck there. And the only way is to go back in, gently lift up that self-judgment, and make a new decision and release it. And then, after you've done that, you have to bring back the energy or power that you lost in making that self-judgment.
That's what's so fascinating about this. I mean, it's easy for you and I to discuss this, but I tell you what, the shift is when you actually experience that state of agape or awe or wonder or transcendence, when all of a sudden everything falls away, no judgment. There's this sense, this universal sense of being, and it's free from anything related to awareness. It's just a state of at ease and at wonderment with all it is. And if I could wish something for everybody on this planet, it would be to have that one moment to have that, because then everything else that we worry about falls away, and you just realize this is such a special place to be at this time in this moment. And maybe that's what we were evolving into, that sense of appreciation, you know, on a greater level of awareness for all of the stuff that we get to go through here. you know, does that make sense?
Yes. And that sense of wonderment, that sense of everything falling away, that is the energy that we work in Sunon therapy. You know, we say it more prosaically. We just say you treat yourself as your own best friend. And you are in a state of energy flow that gently goes around all those judgments in your energy field. I'm sure you're aware of the Kundalini effect, mm-hmm. where yeah. the energy crashes up from your root chakra. The reason it can be so violent and so powerful and can have negative effects is that vibrating energy is butting up against millennia's worth of self-judgment, which do not vibrate. That's why the Kundalini effect can be so strange and wreak so much havoc. But in Sunon therapy and in the afterlife healing circle, we are in a state of flow of that unconditional love. And that opens up your soul senses, and it goes around the self-judgments. So suddenly you can be aware of things that you are not aware of consciously, because they're blocked and trapped by your self-judgments. If we didn't have self-judgment in our energy field, we would remember our past lives, and we would be much more unified and whole instead of feeling fragmented, alienated, and powerless.
Well, there's a part of that too, that sometimes when you get, I mean, some of these people who've had these past life experience, it isn't all peaches and cream. Some people, it's like it's destroyed, because then they thought, oh my gosh, this is what I've done. How can I get beyond that? They get stuck right then in that past life energy and can't quit it until something else happens to shift it into a no longer front and center. I mean, and I'm talking about people who have had memories that aren't as pleasant from a past life, and then all of a sudden that trauma is right there front and center on their doorstep, and they have to go through that first. So in some sense, I think some of the separation gives us a breather or a resting point where we can start afresh on a different level and try and reapproach the problem from a different direction. That's just my own perspective with that.
Well, I can't argue with you. And Jan and I certainly say that there's a reason for those blocks, all right? You put them in there because you needed help. You were overwhelmed, or you didn't understand, or you perceived only at the most superficial level. That's why you make self-judgments. And as long as you're comfortable there, that's not a problem. But when you start seeing those repetitive patterns, when you start feeling those negative things, it's because you want to grow beyond that self-judgment, and it's no longer comfortable for you, all right? You're trying to grow, and now you're butting up against something that's limiting you. And yes, if you just go into a past life as a voyeur, you very well may hit one in which you had a very unpleasant experience, and you come back with all sorts of self-judgments. Now they're in your conscious mind, but you can't free yourself from them, because they're not in the conscious mind. You're just consciously aware of them. You've got to go into that emotional body and lift up the self-judgments. In fact, there's a more complicated version of Sunan therapy that we call contra-vow therapy, because these are self-judgments that are hooked to a denial, and they are stuck in your heart chakra, and they literally cause holes in your heart energy.
Okay, we're going to have to take a break, but I want to come back. We're talking with Candace Talmadge. She's the co-author of The Afterlife Healing Circle, How Anyone Can Contact the Other Side. Now, there are some stories in your book that are fabulous. Some of them have to do with people getting conversations from people who are no longer corporeal. And there's one in there that actually had the story of a woman who, she'd wake up and there were little traces of blood on the sheets. And she's like, she wasn't the source. And what the heck was that about? Those are fascinating. And they are very much a part of our reality. This isn't fiction. These are really impactful, powerful stories of our lives in transition as we're learning about this other element that we are part of. So we're going to come back with that and more of the Afterlife Healing Circle on Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett. Stick around.
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the Lost Cat Magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See, that's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing, don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, is that one.
The free to be me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not so far away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Do you get tired of styling your hair every day? And do you want a good hairstyle every day? Hi, I'm Sarah Schuster. I went on a website called InventNow.org, and after that, I decided to invent something too. Something called the InstaDo. Just imagine, you just put it over your head like a helmet does, and you pick your hairstyle with the buttons on the side. And you can have instant hairstyle in seconds. People like it. People like Jeff Bart.
I like it.
And people like Kenneth.
It's this helmet thing, and it fits over your head, and it's
great. Thank you, Kenneth. You should go to inventnow.org, and it could help you come up with your own invention. After all, look at me on the radio now.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions, or just play some games at inventnow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Conscious Living and Power Radio. Hi there. Thanks for tuning in. I do need to go back and clarify that little blurb with Einstein. There's more to that. Snopes says it may not be quite what we've heard and read about on the internet, but the fact about the love aspect was so romantic and so positive coming from somebody who believes in science. And we have other scientists, one of them who has done tremendous amounts of research on the after-death, afterlife experiences, Dr. Moody, and he does the foreword for your book. So I wanted to draw it back to that element and say, you know, of the people who have been researching these profound experiences for, you know, decades, He's one of the he's like the grandfather of all of this. And to get him to give you such wonderful, glowing praise is a real accomplishment, I think.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it was wonderful to have him do that. And, you know, his foreword really touches on, he loved the fact that we kind of ground our circle in the indigenous people's circles, the Native Americans and in other cultures. You know, they're smarter than we are because they know that their ancestors, all right, are not gone totally, all right? They know that their ancestors are with them. And my whole point about this is that, really, our community is a lot larger than again, we've narrowed it down. You know, it's too limited. We've got to expand it.
When you're doing this work, because this is where it comes into play, the chapter six, where you've got stories and experiences. And one of them talks about a phone conversation. Well, this is Barbara and Kate. Barbara mm-hmm. Strong. Okay, can mm-hmm. you kind of go into that one?
Well, this happens, I believe there are some books about phone calls from the dead, all right,
yeah.
so-called dead.
Yeah.
And this happens, this kind of contact, whether it's a phone call, the cloud in the sky, or a sunset, or some sort of sign, this happens constantly to people. And they do one of two things, or, you know, they just either ignore it and say, I can't accept that because that's not in line with my vision of reality, or it kind of freaks them out and they start looking. I mean, the near-death experience is what I call the most extreme example of trying to wake up to your true soul nature. All right? I advocate the afterlife healing circle as a much less traumatic and lots cheaper way to find out that, yes, you are a soul that is in a physical body and you will not die. All right?
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. Yeah, you don't have to do that drama, trauma thing. You can do this and you'll feel a whole lot better and you'll get just as much of an awareness or a kick about knowing that there's so much more to being than having a body.
Right, but sometimes you have to slap that mule over the head with a 2x4, all right? This is what we run into all the time in our work as Sunan therapists. People's fear, you know, they say love conquers all. Actually, love does not conquer fear, because if it did, the world would be a very different place, because we receive God's love all the time, whether or not we are aware of it. But our own self-judgments, which create our fear, block us from perceiving and receiving that love and taking it in and laying claim to it. So, love can't conquer fear, but it can help you conquer your own fear, or at least resolve your fear to the point that you are ready to do. Because again, we go back to those self-judgments are in place for a reason, and you've got to respect it and allow each person to make the decision and come to the place where he or she is ready to let go of some of those limitations or self-judgments. And that's why we have multiple lifetimes and multiple existence between lifetimes, because we're each moving at his or her own speed.
You talk about the pre-birth bulletins. I like that.
Yes, the pre-birth bulletins. Those are fun, although they can be a bit unnerving, you know, especially when you're just not quite ready to admit that this little soul now is your daughter, and she was asking you. She was kind of over. I don't think that little soul who appeared to Mary Ann really understood quite or appreciated how overwhelming it was to her mother-to-be. So, you know, she really came on gangbusters, and sometimes a little bit of a hint would be better as opposed to just trying to overwhelm someone. She meant well. She meant lovingly. But sometimes, you know, you got to take it one step at a time. Again,
well, yeah, she was pretty front and center with it. And she was, I think, probably just so excited that she found a mom and that, you know, everything was ready. She'd already moved in. And mom's like, wait. We haven't done all the other stuff first. Like, find out that we're pregnant.
Yeah, exactly. And you're right. But it's just interesting about, you know, how the different reaction and the, you know, the preparation it takes to be a parent. And that's another reason I love the Afterlife Healing Circle. because we need all the tools and help we can get to be parents. That's the biggest undertaking any of us will ever have. And we don't, you know, each, the little bundle of joy comes into this world, but there's no user guide. There's no manual. Not for this specific child and this specific soul. Now, there is plenty of great advice about parenting, but it talks in generalities and normals and averages as opposed to this unique being. So what the Afterlife Healing Circle does is allow parents to be, to meet the child before the child is born, get a name, get a life purpose, get some life lessons, and find out how the parent can be the best possible steward of that soul's childhood, and to eat a little humble pie, because the soul coming in is just as old as the soul of the parents, all right? It's just that physical body and mental awareness that's going to need a little maturing.
Well, see, that's the other thing about this is, you know, we look, and that's why I was at the very beginning talking about, I don't recognize them when I'm on this other plane and dealing with my group. Then I come back in here. Yeah, there's an empathic or another sense of, I know this person, but not fully, because I'm still doing the work here. And as long as I'm doing the work here, I can't have 100% of the equation, or I just won't do it. I just know me. I know me. Okay, done. See you, bye. So that part of it, you know, we don't have all of the, I think, answers to our equations, simply because it helps us learn in the trenches and learn in the experience to integrate and really ground what we're trying to become more fluent in, whatever ability, whatever lesson, whatever karmic thing is going on. We have to be in some way, shape, or form completely and totally unaware to be able to really activate that learning. That's part of it. That's why we go to school. That's why we have lessons.
Well, that's true. And, you know, it's also the boredom threshold. Souls are curious and they don't want to be bored. So they like challenges. You know, if I can't imagine, you know, floating on a cloud, playing a harp for the rest of my eternal existence. That would be pretty darn boring.
I don't know that that is anywhere near reality on any shape or form, because it just, that's somebody who didn't have a good enough imagination.
Well, it is very limited, and I'm not sure that'll happen. Although Jana was once talking to her granny, who she loved dearly, and granny was talking about, oh yeah, I'm going to get my harp and wings after I die. And Jana was like, granny, you hold on to that thought. And her granny gave her this look like, what are you talking about? Because Jenna knew her granny, and she would get bored so quickly. And how you move is you ask a question: is this all there is? Is this it?
Yeah.
You know, and that will precipitate movement, and you'll find that no, there's a whole bunch else.
Well, she would discover the piccolo and the French horn and the tuba and the flugelhorn. I mean, like, whoa, look at here.
Exactly. There are many, many instruments for us to play before we've had a tour of the full orchestra. Yes.
All right. There's one in here that's really fascinating, though. And these things are not abnormal. They're just part of our awareness and part of the spectrum of experiences that we haven't fully, I guess, allowed into the room in terms of conversation. This is one where she's in bed and she keeps noticing little dots of blood on the bed sheets, and she's examining. Well, I don't have a scratch. I don't have a cut. What the heck is this? That's a really, I think, a very pertinent story, because it gives you the idea that there's more going on, even from the non-physical realm, that can shift our reality that we still don't know how to explain.
Yes. And again, some souls on the other side, it is all emotional effect. All right. Souls on the other side who don't have physical bodies, they have to have very powerful physical feelings or desires in order to interact with matter and bring something about. And that's what was happening. The soul on the other side really wanted to talk to this woman. And so she, the soul, turned out to be her grandmother, caused the blood to appear. And of course, it was just something to get the granddaughter's attention, and that certainly will get your attention.
Well, she even did a test to find out where it was coming from.
Where it was coming from. It wasn't anything sinister at all, although it would seem sinister. It was just grandma's way of saying, I'm here, you're not paying attention to me otherwise, so listen up, granddaughter, I've got things to say to you, and I'll get your attention. And that's a lot of what all this so-called paranormal activity is really about, is a soul wants someone's attention.
See, that's the part of it, I think, you know, when I've dealt with people who've had experiences with haunted houses and stuff like that, when you go back in and you help them relieve and release some of their trauma, a lot of it had to do with intense fear, intense fright. And there was also a lack of awareness in the people who were around them. And so it just exacerbated it, because everybody's feeding each other's fear, and it becomes, you know, this big, huge dragon when it was just an ant.
Yes, exactly, precisely. So that's why awareness of the soul senses is so vital, because if you really want to communicate with a ghost, set aside all the equipment that ghost hunters put on and just use your soul senses. You can feel a ghost. You can see a ghost. You can know a ghost is there and send thoughts to the ghost, or you can have that understanding. There are four channels of communication. Use them. Reach out. Now, I wouldn't advise doing that without asking for protection, and that, again, is part of the afterlife healing circle. But once you've done that, and once you have requested protection every time for a specific situation, because you always have to ask, once you've done that, then you can reach out and find out what's going on with this soul. Is it just someone who is not even aware that his or her physical body has died? Is there an issue involved, or is there some sort of not so happy intent here? You can get all that information.
Even when you're doing that, it helps to have a real basic knowledge of your own issues, your own propensity to project something that may not be fully, that might not represent the situation. If you already have an issue with being afraid in certain circumstances, don't invite that circumstance until you have a good sense that, well, I can deal with it. I can handle it. I have, you know, I am solid in who I am, because there's nothing worse than going into a situation and being totally blindsided and thinking, oh, I wasn't up to the challenge, and, you know, running back. Well, it's okay. It's safety, running back out the door. But knowing that you're putting yourself in a place where you really don't have a full appreciation for the context and the extreme measures that you will be challenged to deal with, just to prove whether or not you do have a handle on this kind of stuff. It's amazing. It's amazing. And once you realize that pretty much anything's possible, then you have a better appreciation for the abilities we get to learn and, I think, in some way, shape, or form, evolve during our lifetimes as we reincarnate.
Well, Wendy, what you just described, the propensity of souls to bite off more than they can chew, all right? I wouldn't be a therapist if souls didn't do that constantly, because where do you think our self-judgments and issues arise out of? They are part of the consequences of, well, your eyes being bigger than your stomach, or biting off more than you can chew, or there's another saying, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. Most of us really don't have a deep and abiding and profound respect for our own limitations. That's why I love that Dirty Harry line. A man's got to know his limitations. We've all got to know our limitations. But we think a limitation is that means there's something wrong with us. You know, we can't do everything. We can't be all things to all people. Well, we're supposed to. We're supposed to be perfect. Well, that's hogwash. All right? True self-awareness comes when you recognize your wisdom and claim it. And when you recognize your limitations and claim those too, and I can just, you know, pooey pooey, I don't want to do that. I just want my wisdom. I don't want my limitations. I've done that. My clients have done that. But the truth about it is that we are all of the above. We are wise, beautiful beings, and we have limitations. All right? There's no getting around it. So the sooner we become aware of those limitations and respect them and decide step by step when we're emotionally prepared to do, and something we don't know consciously, it's sort of things propel us along, our souls really are determined, we will get let go of those limitations when we're prepared. And that's what Sunon Therapy helps people do. And I love the Afterlife Healing Circle because it gives people a taste of that expanded self-awareness and that flow of unconditional agape love. And that is really, you know, that sort of whets their appetite for more. It really does.
Well, I think the other term is no man is an island. No person is an island. We're here as a collective. And the cool thing about that, when you start working with that non-corporeal, non-physical realm, you realize there is no such thing as being alone. There's an awareness that there is more. And once you tap into that and expand your identity and you expand your access to the unseen and the vibration that is around you all the time. And it doesn't just, it's not just about people, it's about trees, animals, plants, rocks, the whole, everything, the cosmos. When you get into that state, then the collective is much more present. And there's also a sense of this incredible, I can't say enlightenment, but this lightness of kind, of unity, of kindred. It's like, wow, mm-hmm. It's not just me. I have access to all these beings and this information, and it's limitless. But until we get out of our own little ego of, well, I have to do this, and if I don't do it, I'm a bad person, and I did it that way, so I failed, and I can only fail so many times that I'm supposed to be a success, and if I'm not on Oprah, then I'm never gonna succeed because nobody will know who I'm at. It's like all this junk that gets stuck in there, in that role of who is and who is important, is just a big cheese sandwich.
Well, it's a distraction, all right? And the only reason it gets stuck is I go back to consciousness and the effect of on consciousness of self-judgment.
Yeah.
We are attached and we are isolated and we are separated and we are powerless because self-judgment has wreaked havoc on the energy of our consciousness. Self-judgment does not vibrate. And as I said at the start of our discussion, each soul has a unique vibration pattern, but that pattern cannot be as strong or as profound as it could be because it is hamstrung and hampered by self-judgment. When we start to free that up, boy, things start to change.
Well, I think
quickly.
Part of it's also competition, because in our society, at least in Western culture, there's this this constant thing of putting people, pitting them against each other and saying that's a success and that's a good effort. If you go in and you say, well, so-and-so is doing this and you need to do it better, and this is a top performer, so you need to beat the top performer. It just totally removes teamwork and the camaraderie that comes from being part of a huge and wonderful element of being that says, look, we've got this. And if I can't do it, Tommy can. And if Tommy can't do it, Joan can. And we've got this whole thing. That's the reason everybody has unique talents. Otherwise, it would be one big, huge harp, and that would be absolutely no fun.
Well, that's why Jana always says, you know, that's why God didn't stop with Adam. All right.
He had
that's
an orchestra. Oh, well, yeah. He didn't stop with Adam. Did he start with Adam? Do we really know that for sure? Are you sure?
No, I think he started with Eve. But that's,
yeah.
You know, and
Eve on another planet, okay?
Eve on another planet, and she's definitely the improved model. But we'll just leave that one. But yes, we're beginning to be aware that if we give over our limitations and weaknesses to someone else, they can fill in the slack. And that's really what a friend is. A friend accepts you even though, you know, he or she knows your weaknesses and can fill in. A spouse is the same way. Jana and I fill in each other's blanks, all right? She's strong in areas that I couldn't deal with if my life depended on it. And vice versa, I can do things that she just doesn't want to handle, all right? So we don't, that opposites attract for that reason, all right? They do. You know, we're each looking for someone who can shore up our weaknesses and celebrate our strengths. But then we kill each other because, well, you're not like me. You don't do it my way. Nope, we don't. And that's because we're each unique individuals. Yeah. But if we say, okay, she or he's not like me, but he or she can do things that I can't or handle things that I just can't deal with, then we can celebrate that and say, here, have my weakness. And that's what Jana and I have been doing for the past, you know, 28 years or so, trying to come to grips with our own relationship.
Well, the complementary element, because that's what happens is sometimes the other person can do it and you go, well, but okay, now this is the way you should do it. It's like, wait. The whole reason for having them do it is letting them do it in their own special, unique, cool way. So you don't have to be responsible. And that also means you don't have to sit there and ride shotgun and tell them how it should be done. You get out of the way. I'm doing it. Okay.
Yes. And when we sit there and ride shotgun, it's because we have issues of self-trust. That's really what's going on. So you just have to say, okay, chill, you know, I'm handling it. But again, this is all a part about the community, why we support, why and how we can support each other. But we have to recognize there's a big difference from being asked for support, can you help me in X way, and rushing in and trying to take over. And a lot of us don't get the difference, and then we get into a whole bunch of trouble because we're rushing in to take over rather than coming in when asked and doing and helping in some specific manner.
So when people want to take a class or a session or a course or learn out more, you know, to get connect, you were talking about how that pre-birth bulletin, you know, the little soul comes in and says, hey, guess what? I'm not Cupid, but I'm the next best thing. Cupid's delivery.
Yes.
Okay. So when they contact you for a session or to come in, is there was one I saw was like a 7-day, like a week long.
Right. And what they can do is just go to the healingcirclebook.com and they can contact us there. We'll talk, you know, we'll get in touch. That's how you get in touch with us. And, you know, we try to, you know, we can't do for free. We do the Afterlife Healing Circle for free. So we can't do that on a regular diet, but we will do it, you know, if people get to us and they really, you know, we can have people and we can set one up. But what we wrote the book for is to make people familiar with the concept and to encourage them to recognize that they have all the tools they need to get this kind of resolution for themselves.
Well, right? I think that's part of it, is just saying this is accessible. It isn't abnormal. It's just beyond our current definition of what normal or what reality is, because that's once you've had any of these experiences, you pretty quickly come to terms with our reality as lacking in definition.
Yes, except some people are really pretty much determined not to come to that grips just yet. I mean, again, that's their own soul path, and they have these experiences, and they just don't really want to talk about it, or they just sort of put it in a compartment and ignore it, and that's fine. I don't have a beef with that because, again, each soul has his or her own path, and we'll all get to, you know, just like all rivers eventually end up in the sea and all seas are one, all of us are on our growth paths, and eventually we will go and work into and move into that expanded being that we want to be, but we don't quite see how to get there yet.
Right. Okay. At this point, I think the I don't get it is not listening to this show, because the what I'm getting the response from are people who are saying, finally, somebody's talking about this like it exists, and there's no discussion of is it or isn't it. There's just a profound acceptance of this is it. Okay, kids, let's go to the next level. And that's why I'm talking to you, because you've been there, you've done that, you've seen the other side. You know, this is our reality. We are connected. There is no death of the being as there is a death of a physical. So as they're listening, as you are listening to this and you connect to it, what resonates for you, because you are already in this pool and expanding your expression and your vibration and your identity just by virtue of allowing a new insight to filter into the equation. And Candace, I'm so glad you guys are doing what you're doing, because it makes it so palatable. It makes it easy to access. It gives people a sense of, yay, I knew I wasn't alone.
Well, thank you, Wendy. And my thought is that for us, we like to practice what we call practical spirituality. All right? This is part of our everyday lives. We aren't divorced from our spiritual being. We are spiritual beings. You know, you really can't be divorced from your spiritual nature. You can ignore it or deny it if you want to. But I think most of your listeners are trying to grapple with it and recognize that it's there. And I just want to encourage them, it is not abnormal, all right? You are the spiritual being. And so you can relax about that and allow your spirituality to unfold to you in your own way.
And that's a good way to say it, in your own way, because there is no book that has your template, that has your recipe. That's what you're here for. You brought it with you. Just start figuring it out. And that's the cool. That's where the elbow grease comes in, and the surprises and the epiphanies and the ahas and the OMGs. That's where it gets really fun, when you have your own. And then you can say, well, this is what happened to me. And somebody else says, oh, wow, I had no idea we were having the same experience. That's the beauty of it. And you talk about a little bit of that in the book. When people have these similar experiences at the same time and they connect, talk, share, there's no fear. When we learn, we're all in this together. Candace, thank you. The Afterlife Healing Circle, how anyone can contact the other side. You can get it on your website. It's the Afterlife Book Circle or Afterlife Book. How does that? I put the page away.
HealingCircleBook.com. And you can buy it at any online store or at physical bookstores. It's available there.
Okay. And if you want to make an appointment with Candace, well, that's on the website too. All right. Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate your time. You know, we got things to do and places to see and all sorts of imaginative things that we are creating and bringing into our reality just by thinking about them, manifesting. It's incredible. And it's happening right now. Think the highest thoughts. You're bringing them in. And thank you. Till next time. See ya.